Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents HBR Guide to Coaching Employees by Harvard Business Review, narrated by Jonathan Yen. Publisher's note, this audiobook has bonus material. Please contact whomever you purchased this audiobook from to request the material.
What You'll Learn. When you're swamped with work, it's hard to make time to coach your employees and do it well. But if you don't help them build their skills, they'll keep coming to you for answers instead of finding their own solutions. That kind of hand-holding kills productivity and creativity, and you can't sustain it. In the long run, it eats up a lot more time and energy than investing in people's development. So, you really must coach to be an effective manager. Got a star on your team who's eager to advance? An underperformer who's dragging the group down? A steady contributor who feels bored and neglected? With all of them, you'll need to agree on goals for growth, motivate them to achieve those goals, support their efforts, and measure their progress. This guide gives you the tools to do that. You'll get better at asking the right questions before you dispense advice, creating realistic but inspiring plans for growth, providing the support employees need to achieve peak performance, tapping their learning styles to make greater progress, giving them feedback they'll actually apply, giving them room to grapple with problems and discover solutions, engaging your employees and fostering independence, matching people's skills with your organization's needs, customizing your approach. Introduction. Why Coach? By Ed Batista. After graduating from business school, I was hired by a founding board of directors to launch a new organization, the Nonprofit Technology Enterprise Network. I had shared a leadership position before, but this was my first time as a solo chief executive, and I believed it was my responsibility to come up with the best ideas myself and champion them aggressively. This approach led to a number of conflicts with my directors. A mentor of mine on the board took me aside and said, "We think you're a talented young guy, but you have some rough edges. We'd like you to invest in yourself and get a coach." One of my former professors had a coaching practice, and I asked her to take me on as a client. That was one of the best things I've ever done. Although few coaching clients ultimately decide to become coaches, as I did, my positive experience of coaching is typical. The tremendous growth in the field over the past 20 years has been driven by consistent reports from clients who feel more effective and fulfilled as a result of the coaching they've received. And it doesn't help only at the individual level. Although researchers can't yet precisely measure coaching's effect on organizational performance, numerous studies, published in the Journal of Management, Consulting Psychology Journal, and other publications, show a positive impact. Being coached helped me understand that I could make the biggest difference as a leader, not by doing more than everyone else, but by empowering other people to do more and motivating them to do their best. This meant letting go of certain responsibilities and recognizing the limits of my expertise. I didn't need to have all the answers. I just needed to ask the right questions. In short, I came to realize that effective leadership looks a lot like coaching. But what do we mean by coaching in the first place? The simplest definition is asking questions that help people discover the answers that are right for them. A more specific definition that applies to you as a leader and manager is a style of management primarily characterized by asking employees questions in order to help them fulfill their immediate responsibilities more effectively and advance their development as professionals over time. The emphasis on asking questions is noteworthy when we consider that conventional leadership roles typically position the leader as the expert, someone who provides answers and whose domain knowledge is one of the foundations of her authority. In contrast, when a leader acts as a coach, she needs to adopt a different mindset and add value in different ways. It's no coincidence that the increased demand for coaching has accompanied the shift from command and control hierarchies to flatter, more distributed organizations. In the 1950s, management thinker Peter Drucker coined the term knowledge worker to describe a newly emerging cohort among the white-collar ranks. Today, most professionals fall into this category. Because they require, and desire, little or no direct supervision, and often know more about their tasks than their managers do, knowledge workers usually respond well to coaching. Unlike directive, top-down management, coaching allows them to make the most of their expertise while compelling them to stretch and grow. As their manager, you set overall direction for them, but you let them figure out how best to get there. Many senior managers and HR executives have come to view coaching as an investment in high potentials or as a perk for stars. Others still see coaching mainly as a corrective measure for underperformers. Daniel Goleman noted in his classic Harvard Business Review, HBR, article, Leadership That Gets Results, that despite coaching's merits, it was used least often among the management styles he studied. Leaders told Goleman that they didn't have time to coach their employees, and you may feel the same way. But coaching is broadly applicable, and managers at all levels can benefit from working with their direct reports in this way. You may need to encourage those around you to participate, and you may need to be persuaded yourself. If so, I urge you to give it a try and gauge the return on your investment. Although external coaches like me will always play an important role in supporting leaders and their teams, coaching shouldn't be our exclusive domain. It's an essential management tool, and there are circumstances when a coaching manager can be more useful than a professional coach. I often help clients reflect on difficult experiences in order to make sense of what happened and extract some learning, but these conversations occur days or even weeks after the event. A leader who has coaching skills can help team members begin to reflect on a difficult experience immediately. Highly skilled leaders can even facilitate these discussions with their entire team present, allowing everyone to learn simultaneously. When leaders view coaching as the sole purview of external professionals like me, they miss countless opportunities to add value. My experience as a coaching client, as someone who teaches coaching to MBA students, and as a professional coach has shown me the value of coaching as a management technique, and a large and growing body of research reinforces this conclusion. It takes time and effort, but the material in this guide will help you integrate coaching methods and processes into your own management style. There's no right way to coach, so you'll have to decide for yourself which approaches described in the chapters that follow work best for you and your direct reports. Like any new skill, coaching requires practice, and you'll need to step outside your comfort zone as you experiment. Don't be too quick to write off a technique just because it feels awkward at first. Coaching presents every manager with challenges. You may have to reconsider your leadership style and the ways in which you add value. You may feel reluctant to surrender control or to give people room to make mistakes, and you'll almost certainly be tempted to jump in with solutions when they're struggling with a problem. But those challenges get easier the more you coach, and the payoff is enormous. You'll tap your employees' full potential while leading more strategically. Last year, a client who'd founded a successful company concluded that his management style was holding back the firm. He and his senior managers had so many tactical responsibilities that they weren't truly leading. They were putting out fires with a limited capacity to take a longer view and make the systemic changes the business needed. So my client decided to restructure his role, delegating some tasks to his senior managers. He coached them as they assumed these duties, prompting them with questions to solve problems in creative new ways, rather than simply telling them what had worked in the past. They, in turn, took the same approach with their direct reports. As a result, the company's management team raised its sights and focused on more strategic issues, which had a positive impact on the business. And my client found that he was actually more productive while spending less time in the office. When he sold the company and stepped down from his leadership role, he left with confidence that the management team would adjust seamlessly, and the business has continued to thrive. That's what's possible when you coach your employees. That's why it's absolutely worth your time. And that's why you'll find this guide an invaluable addition to your leadership reading. Ed Batista is an executive coach and an instructor at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. He writes regularly on issues related to coaching and professional development at www.edbatista.com, and he is currently writing a book on self-coaching for Harvard Business Review Press. Section 1. Preparing to Coach Your Employees. Chapter 1. Shift Your Thinking to Coach Effectively by Candace Frankovilia. Do you ever say to yourself or others, "This person just doesn't get it," or "This person will never have what it takes"? If so, you may have what Stanford psychologist Carol Dweck calls a fixed mindset, which will severely limit your ability to make a difference as a coach. Low expectations rarely yield growth and often lead to frustration on both sides. You may occasionally encounter someone who truly can't develop, but the real barrier is most often the belief that the person won't make progress. It's easy to fall into this trap. After you've acquired a lot of experience and knowledge in your field, doing things yourself may seem simpler and faster than helping your direct reports improve their critical thinking, technical, or organizational skills. But that's a short-term solution that leads to long-term problems. If you keep providing all the answers, people will keep lining up at your door looking for them. Shifting your mindset. In the end, it's actually less time-consuming to embrace a growth mindset, one that assumes your people can learn. If you invest in their coaching and development early on, you'll reap benefits later. They'll start solving more of their own day-to-day problems, freeing you to focus on strategic issues and developing more leaders. Shifting to a growth mindset takes effort. In the coaching workshops I teach to managers, participants talk about how hard it can be at first, but once they make the switch, they start seeing better outcomes. An R&D director at a manufacturing company had an employee who struggled to give clear, concise, organized presentations. When that person asked for input on a draft slide deck, the manager's impulse was to mark it up with suggestions to reorganize the information and cut down on the length. But then she caught herself. She called the employee in for a conversation and asked clarifying questions. What are the key points you want to convey? How much does your audience already know? What points will be difficult for people to grasp? If you were in their place, would this presentation help you reach your goals? What can you do to bring it more in line with what your stakeholders are hoping to achieve? With renewed energy and focus, the employee went back to work and improved the presentation without heavy-handed intervention from the manager. A growth mindset can feel risky because it forces you, the coach, to develop skills of your own that go beyond subject matter expertise. You must ask questions and really listen without jumping in to provide what you believe is the right answer. And you must be honest about the performance you expect and where your employee stands to make sure you're on the same page about the development work that needs to be done. Otherwise, you're resigning yourself to the status quo. So why even bother to coach? Sharpening your coaching skills. Here are the key skills you'll need to hone before you can help others learn and grow. Reconciling intent and impact. You can gauge an employee's impact on the organization by observing him in action and using performance metrics such as satisfaction surveys and sales figures. But you won't know his intent, the driving force behind his behavior, unless he shares it with you. When employees underperform, there's often a gap between intent and impact, and that can lead to great misunderstanding and frustration. Coaching them effectively involves clarifying their intent so that you can close that gap. How? By asking them what impact they meant to have. For instance, you might say to someone, "You were quiet at the last sales meeting. Can we talk about why?" You and others may have viewed his silence as resistance or disengagement, but perhaps he was just trying to cede the floor for a change, knowing that he can be domineering in group discussions. Once you've asked the question, listen closely to the answer. Discuss behaviors that confuse or surprise you, especially those that don't match the intent he describes. You're likely to miss out on critical information if you find yourself talking more than listening, suggesting solutions before the employee has the chance to do so, interrupting, thinking about what you want to say next instead of focusing on what your employee is saying, using body language that signals impatience or distraction, checking your email, accepting phone calls, leaning back in your chair, saying what you would have done differently in the same situation. Here are some active listening tactics. Pay attention. Build rapport by giving your full attention. Maintain comfortable eye contact and an open posture. Avoid hunching, crossing your legs, or hunkering behind a desk. Be genuinely curious. Allow time and opportunity for the other person to think and speak. Avoid distractions such as email. Notice nonverbal cues. Hear the speaker's nonverbal messages and body language. Do the tone of voice and facial expression match what's being said? If not, comment on what you notice and ask your employee to tell you more about it. Affirm what you hear. Indicate understanding. "I hear what you're saying," or "I'm following you. Could you say more?" This simply means that you are listening closely, not that you agree. Reflect what you see and hear. Reflect, like a mirror, the other person's emotions without agreeing or disagreeing. "You seem worried about." This encourages the speaker to express feelings and deepen exploration. Paraphrase what you hear. Periodically restate basic ideas to check your grasp of key points. "If I understand, your idea is..." "Did I get the essence of it? If not, please tell me more." Summarize key themes. Briefly sum up the other person's point of view to show you've listened and to check your understanding. "It sounds like your main concern is..." or "These seem to be your main points. Is that right?" As a rule of thumb, ask more than you tell. Aim for a ratio of about 4-1. If you flip that ratio, you're teaching, not coaching. Though teaching plays an important role in developing others, it's limited to what you know. Coaching is an interactive opportunity to discover and create previously unknown solutions. Always assume positive intent, even when dealing with difficult behavior. People usually mean well, and if you give them the benefit of the doubt, they'll be more forthcoming about their intent and more receptive to feedback. Teaching versus coaching. To develop employees' skills, you must first decide whether to teach or coach. Are you working with an inexperienced colleague or one who requires immediate improvement? If so, you'll want to teach, which means showing or telling her what to do. Otherwise, you're probably better off coaching, asking questions that prompt her to think and solve problems on her own. That way, your employee will gain the independence and confidence she needs to grow, whether she's trying to achieve greater mastery in her role or take on new responsibilities. Approach. Teaching. A directive approach. Used for instructing. Example, having an employee shadow you on a task or project, such as a joint sales call, so that she can learn by observing you. Also used for providing answers. Example, explaining the business strategy to a new hire. Approach. Coaching. A supportive approach. Used for encouraging independence. Example, allowing someone to learn on the job, even if it means risking mistakes. Also used for serving as a resource. Example, providing helpful contacts so that your employee can learn from others, not just you. Adapted from Harvard Business Essentials, Coaching and Mentoring. Recognizing your biases. Your own preferences can get in the way of discovering others' intent. Maybe you have a gut reaction against certain personality types or struggle to identify with colleagues whose work styles differ from yours. Whatever your biases, recognizing them allows you to move past them by inquiring about intent rather than jumping to conclusions or filling in the blanks. To spot your biases, use frustration as your guide. Think about what gets on your nerves at work, and then ask a few trusted colleagues for feedback. What do they think your bugbears are? Compare their thoughts with yours. Look for similarities and patterns. That exercise helped one manager recognize her tendency to jump right into action rather than spend time defining and aligning processes. She noticed how impatient she became when team members kept pulling conversations back to process instead of just getting the work done. When she asked them for candid feedback on this, they explained that her impatience actually slowed them down, the last thing she wanted to do, because they often had to loop back to clarify expectations with her. So her impact, as well as her team's, didn't match her intent. She met her employees halfway by doing a better job of clarifying expectations up front. She also encouraged them to make more adjustments on the fly so they wouldn't get paralyzed by planning and slavish adherence to process. As the general level of impatience and frustration dropped, the group began to operate more efficiently and enjoyed the work more. Matching people's skills with big-picture needs. As a coach to your employees, you're not just helping them grow for their own sake, noble as that is. You're also boosting their ability to support the company's mission and goals. By explicitly connecting their skills with big-picture needs, you'll give them a sense of purpose and belonging, which will motivate them to grow. If you explain how improving their communication skills will make the team more efficient, for example, or increase sales to clients, they'll be more likely to take their development in that area as seriously as you do. How can you get better at connecting the dots between their skills and the organization's needs? There's no magic here. Again, you'll get a wealth of information simply by asking. Where do they feel their skills are best used? What excites them about their work? What areas do they struggle with? What would they like to do more of? Less of? How do they see all that fitting into the organization's objectives? For more on channeling employees' passions and strengths, reference Chapter 2, Set the Stage to Stimulate Growth. Make it clear that you're looking out for their interests as well as the company's. They'll be eager to help you figure out how they can best serve the organization, and how the organization, and you, can best serve them. Developing a growth mindset means you're learning right along with your employees. The more coaching practice you get, the sharper your skills will become. But give yourself a running start by favoring inquiry over advocacy. Ask questions about others' intent, your own biases, an individual's place in the big picture, and resist the temptation to coach by explaining how you do things. With prompting, not lecturing, your employees will discover solutions of their own and make greater, more lasting progress toward their developmental goals. Candace Francavilla is a coaching portfolio manager and a senior faculty member at the Center for Creative Leadership. Adapted from the Center for Creative Leadership's course, Coaching for Greater Effectiveness. For further information, visit www.ccl.org. Chapter 2. Set the Stage to Stimulate Growth by Edward M. Hollowell, M.D. Editor's Note. Before you begin coaching your employees, set the stage for success. Make sure they're doing the right jobs to begin with. They feel connected to their work and to one another. They're receptive, and they're capable of mastering the skills and tasks their roles require. Using basic principles from brain science, you can address each of those issues and help people achieve peak performance. The brain is remarkably plastic. It grows and adapts throughout life. That means you're never stuck with who you are or who your employees are. We used to think only young brains could change and develop. We now know that adult brains do too. We can all get smarter and wiser and happier. The conventional, dreary wisdom that people can't change is scientifically incorrect. We've also discovered many of the forces that make the brain change for better or worse. For example, challenging a person in an area where she is skilled makes her brain grow, much like a muscle. But overwhelming her with more than she can cope with is bad for her brain. Instilling confidence in someone leads to improved performance, but an atmosphere of chronic fear disables the brain and makes performance worse. So, what about the guy down the hall who keeps failing in his role? With proper care, he can learn to perform at higher levels. He can continue to grow for decades, and you, as his manager, can help him do so. Achieving peak performance. Drawing on what we know about neuroplasticity, I've outlined a practical plan for achieving peak performance. By peak performance, I don't mean taking on every task and embracing every opportunity. When people try to do more than they can handle, they fall short. Instead, I'm talking about consistent excellence with improvement over time at a specific task or set of tasks. How can people pull that off? By following these 5 steps with your guidance and support. Step 1. Select. Before your employees do anything, it's important to figure out what they should do. Help them achieve peak performance by selecting tasks, 1, that they are good at, 2, that they like to do, and 3, that add value to the project or organization. The intersection of those 3 elements creates the magical field in which consistent excellence can happen. This first step influences everything that follows, yet it is often overlooked. Millions of employees underachieve simply because they stumbled into the wrong job and never got out of it. It is critical that you know your employees well enough to help them get into the right slots in the organization. Consider Mary Ann, a customer service associate at a large financial services firm. After 5 years of answering customer calls, there wasn't a problem she hadn't heard or solved. Even so, she never felt 100% comfortable in her role. She got flustered when customers became irritated, and she'd...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?